this was my identity.
Nobody talks about how freaking hard it is to be a dentist. What most people talk about is how this affects the patient. What nobody talks about is how this affects us. Dentistry is ready for this. Now is really the time. Welcome back to Wellness in Dentistry. Today is going to be a very interesting discussion. The topic today is why shorter work weeks may save your sanity as a dentist. Ooh, this is a good one. So I am Dr. Kyle Stanley. I am a dentist, a tech entrepreneur, speaker, and researcher, and I am joined by your co-host and my co-host, Dr. Martin Mendelson, who is a disabled dentist, coach, speaker, thought leader, and an author. And together, Martin and I have helped thousands of dental professionals pursue wellness in dentistry. And if you want to dive deeper into what we talk about, and we really go into this topic, actually, come on August 8th and 9th. We're giving a two-day CE course. We call it Lightside Live, and it's a really transformational course. You get 12 CE credits. We get doctors from all over the world, all over the country, all over North America, and it's super fun time. So go to wellnessanddentistry.com, click on links, and you'll see it at the top of our links. It's called Lightside Live. So Martin, today... Yes. We've got this topic of why shorter work weeks may save your sanity as a dentist. What are your thoughts on this?
It's one of my favorite topics because it boils down to one thing that starts with the letter M. You know what that is? Math. That's literally all it is. I've seen so many of our colleagues be able to reduce their work week in terms of the number of days and still be as or more productive than they were, let's say, working, you know, 3 versus 4 or 4 versus 5. That saves their sanity, it saves their back, saves their neck to a greater degree. And it is doable. People do it, but they do it with intention and they do it with numbers, basically.
So that's kind of the how. Let's save that for a little bit later in the episode. And let's first talk about the why.
Yeah.
And I think the why is really to avoid burnout, to do this for longer than a few years. This job is extremely challenging. And, you know, other jobs you can do 5, 6, 7 days a week and you may not get burnt out. But I know what I've seen and what we've seen with many doctors from around the world is even doing this 5 days a week can lead to burnout. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, I think it's multifaceted. First of all, it's and I know you're an expert in talking about compassion fatigue, and we'll get there later. But there's physical elements to it, psychological elements to it. Furthermore, you know, if particularly if you're a practice owner or even an associate with managerial responsibilities, you can't do two things at the same time. And so when you're working 4 days a week or 5 days a week without, shall we say, an admin day, well, then when the hell are you supposed to do this stuff? At night? On the weekends? There's only 24 hours in the day. So it becomes a discussion also of efficiency to some degree and reality to another degree, because you can't do two things at the same time. You just can't.
Well, with me, you know, I got out of residency. I was working mostly as a surgeon. I was working for a lot of DSOs. And I was basically a tooth extractor.
Yeah.
I was sedating patients, doing sedations with mostly extraction. So these were wisdom teeth cases, you know, the cases that the general practitioners didn't want to see or didn't want to take out. So they passed it to me, who was the surgeon. Yeah. And at one time, I was extracting upwards of 80 to 90 teeth a day.
Wow.
And I don't say this as a thing to brag, because it didn't last for very long. Because what happened was I got double tennis elbow, extraction elbow, in both of my hands.
Yeah.
I couldn't even feed myself. For those of you that are watching us on the video, I couldn't put my neck, my mouth to my hands. My arms didn't bend that much. Oof. And so I remember my dad and I, we went to a CE course while this was like this. And he had to cut my food up and put it in front of me like a dog. And I ate it off of the plate like a dog. I mean, to think that it took me to get to that point in order
Yeah.
to say, whoa, okay, maybe I need to cut back on this is crazy. It's like we dentists will kill our bodies and our minds as long as our work doesn't suffer.
Yes, correct, correct. And I think that there's a misnomer to that too, because is our work suffering or not, right? And
Right.
so we work, you were talking about the surgical realm, which is precise, and some may argue not as precise as some elements of restorative, depending on the situation. But at the end of the day, there's a limit to how much we can push our bodies. And so we have to be realistic about that. And look, when you're younger, you have more stamina, you can work longer hours, and by the same token, you can also physically end up, quote, burning yourself up much more quickly, as you described. And so it really becomes a conversation you have to have with yourself, and be realistic with yourself, and also respecting financial pressures. So I don't want the listeners to think we're being flippant about financial pressures, whether that's practice loans, school loans, et cetera. There is a minimum amount of money we need to make to be able to pay our bills and put food on the table. We have to address that. We have to accept that. While at the same token, within the confines of this math, then it becomes, okay, how are we going to get to that number is the real question, I think.
Yeah, let's talk about before we go into the math, let's talk about dental compassion fatigue.
Yeah.
This is kind of what I call it, but really what it's called in the research is vicarious trauma. So this previously was mostly studied on medical doctors, therapists, psychologists. And what it is the exactly what it sounds like, the vicarious trauma that these medical practitioners show, the trauma that they show by dealing every day with trauma victims. And I don't want to call our patients victims, but I mean it's traumatic, right? I mean there's pain, there's discomfort, there's financial discomfort, there is the fear of the unknown, right? I mean there's a lot of emotions that go on with patients during their dental procedures. Even if you're a great dentist and the procedure is great, patients still exhibit some form of emotional response, right? And what I learned from this vicarious trauma is that they're not the only ones that have emotions during this, right? I mean, it sounds so stupid now, but dentists, and this study that I'm talking about specifically was done in 2019, is dentists specifically also show this vicarious trauma, meaning when we work on patients, we take on some of what our patients experience. And what the research shows, really just to summarize it, is the more hours you work, the more burnout you have. The more hours you work, the more vicarious trauma you have. And the more hours you work, the less empathy you have. And it seems simple when you see it like this, but I think most of us think that we're kind of this robot that we can just like take everything and we never are going to be impacted by what happens every day. I think because it's like a micro dose, right? So every patient is a micro dose of vicarious trauma, which may not be that much after a year, after 3 years, after 5 years, but hey, now you've been practicing 10 years, 20 years, 40 years doing this, to expect that you're not going to have any changes in your emotions would be insane, right?
Absolutely. You just made me think of something that I've never thought of before, because I've heard you speak to this many times. And those reels online where they joke around if your mom or dad is a physician or an ER doctor, and you injure yourself, and they joke around, it's like, you chopped your hand off, and they're like, yeah, you'll be fine, put a Band-Aid on it.
Right.
It's rather interesting. So that would be an example, in the medical community, that's a bit humorous in a way. But yeah, it's something that we really need to address. And I also wonder, I don't want to get on a tangent here, but could we extend that to individuals that have had real challenges with team, where they feel as if they've been dinged time after time after time? And so Their
Oh, I
compassion goes
completely agree
down.
with you. I completely agree. I think that's part of the dental compassion fatigue is dealing with your team members. I mean, most, it may even be worse. You know, I don't
100%.
have the research on that because the research that I was looking at was based on patients, but you and I talk to doctors from all over the world all the time. Most of them complain more about their team than they do their patients, to be honest.
Well, it was interesting. I was moderating a panel webinar last night, and it was about embezzlement and HR and leasehold terms and stuff. And there was this one participant. I don't know if it was a dentist or not because they were anonymous. But they were expressing a lot of frustration around team and, I've done this and I've done that and I've done this and I've done that. And, it's something we need to respect. But by the same token, every human being is an individual. And to assume everybody's going to react and interact the same way is a bit foolhardy. Because if you turn that around and said to that person, I don't know if it was a man or a woman, are you like every other dentist in the world? And they'd be like, well, heck no. It's like, okay, then. So yeah,
The
just a little
interesting
side
thing
note.
about the research that I'm talking about is when they talk about how to get better, right? Okay, so we've noticed that dental compassion fatigue is there. They don't call it that. That vicarious trauma is there. How do we get better? And they talk about communication skills, exercise, time with family and friends, nutrition, taking time off. And I think now is the time when we can start talking about the how.
Yeah, totally. Well, it also speaks to, and I always mess up the version of this world, so excuse me. The diversity identity
Diversified
strategy,
identity strategy, yes.
which you teach, which is about, having a diversity within your life. You're not just a dentist. You're a dentist, you're a spouse, you're a parent, you're somebody who loves surfing in your case, or cooking in my case, or writing and so forth. So let's talk about the how. I think that'll be fun.
Yeah, so you know, we've talked about how dentistry is challenging. Anybody listening to this knows it is challenging.
Absolutely.
And we get out of school and we need to pay our bills. We need to pay our student loans, especially if you got out of school recently in the US. And so we work as much as we can, right? We work 6 days a week, 7 days a week, 5 days a week, whatever it may be. But I'm not so sure that's sustainable. Now, once you get to a point of where you have an idea of, let's say you're a practice owner, right? And you have an idea of how your practice runs, how your production is. Let's say you've had a practice for 2 years and you get to this point and you say, well, gosh, I am really burnt out working 5 days a week. What can I do to work less? Like, I can't work 5 days a week anymore. It's not possible. I'm going to burn out. I'm going crazy. What do I do?
But I think the first thing I would say is from a mindset perspective. First of all, you're not alone. And that this is at its core an analytics challenge. And there are other dentists that have figured this out. There are other dentists that have figured this out, I guarantee you, within 2 miles of you, if you're in a major metropolitan area. I promise you. So the first thing we need to do is sit back and figure out what our average production per hour is. That's number one. We have to figure out what that is. We also have to figure out within that, what are the procedures that we've been doing? Like, what's driving that average production? Part of that, as well, is we need to understand what our case acceptance percentages are within this average as well. So, once we've kind of figured that all out, we could then say, all right, in order to make X per year based on my average production, I would need to work Y days. Now, if your Y days is actually less than your actually working, well, that's a good day at the office. And of course, I would double check the math because, on its core, that might not be exactly correct. But the point is that we then need to look at the gap. So if we want to work, let's say we're working 48 weeks a year right now, just for shoots and giggles, between holiday. So this is, again, pure numbers. So hear me out, folks. I'm not saying necessarily you're taking 4 weeks of vacation, but think about it. You have holidays in there, right? Like, you're not open Christmas or New Year's Day, as an example. You have sick days in there. You have CE days in there, those kind of things. So you may only be working 48 weeks a year. And so then we need to figure out, okay, so within those 40 weeks, 48 weeks a year, what is the gap? And so what's interesting is, let's say you're 10% off for the year. That isn't 10% off per day. So we can actually figure out what the math is relative to how much do we need to increase per day on average to be able to work one day less. Once we have that number, then we can start figuring out which levers do we need to pull relative to achieving that number. Is it case acceptance? Is it the template that the practice is utilizing or not utilizing? And so that's kind of diving deep into the weeds. I think the other way I've heard this approached is take a look at your five best days, your highest producing days, figure out what you did during those days, and then template those days.
Yeah, this to me falls down to planning. It falls down to expectations and boundaries because a lot of this has to do with your team.
Oh,
It's
100%.
you setting this expectation, setting the boundary of this is how we templatize our schedule. And then when the calls come in or when they're making outbound, whatever it may be, then they're going to schedule in these specific windows so that we know what our daily goal is.
Absolutely.
And it can
Absolutely.
be to the point of where if you hit the daily goal, then there's some kind of incentive for the team, right? Or the monthly goal or the yearly goal or whatever. That's a whole nother topic, which we've done other podcasts on. So on bonuses, make sure to go back and listen to those. I think having a practice where your team doesn't know the daily goal is a misstep.
Yeah, I agree. And let me just rephrase what I said earlier, because I was getting kind of really excited about it, and I may have gotten a little bit too detailed too quickly. So basically, what I would suggest is you take a look at the production that you've had over the last, let's say, 2 years. You divide that by the number of days that you worked, and that's your average. Okay.
Per day,
So, yeah, per
right?
day.
Production per day.
Production per day. Then what you're going to do is you're going to say, okay, I want to work X number of days fewer the following year. Therefore, based on my average production, what would I need to produce per day to equal that number? That's going to give you a gap between how much you're producing on average currently and how much you would need to produce in the future to work, let's just say, that one day less. Once you have that number, then you can figure out how to get there, whether that's through case acceptance, whether that's through templating, whether that's through maybe even adding an additional team member so we can work in multiple chairs in a templated fashion. So that I think is a more simplistic explanation than where I
And
was
it's
going
funny, is
before.
like something that you say how we don't always have to look in dentistry to find the answers for things.
Oh,
And what we do outside of the chair is basically the same thing that everybody does, but what we do inside the chair is extremely different. This goes back to anything in life. Setting a goal, if you don't have the goal, it's hard to know how to get there.
Oh,
It's
100%.
this whole idea of beginning with the end in mind, which I ran around the world and taught for many years from the guided surgery standpoint, right? Let's find out where the crown goes first, then let's put the implant where the implant needs to be and work backwards, right? But it's the same thing with your life. Begin with the end in mind first. So let's say you make 250,000 and you want to make 250,000, but work two less weeks a year, right? It's just that M word, it's that math word to figure out how to get there. And like you said, let's say you figure out, okay, my average per day is, I don't know, 3,500, and I need to get to 4,500 a day, something like this. And like you said, okay, 4,500 a day, that's maybe an extra night guard, or it's an extra, half a crown, or it's this many ortho starts a month, or it's this many implants or wisdom teeth cases, whatever it is, you can then figure out what it needs to be. And having that goal makes it so much easier. It's so funny. My dad was like this too. My dad's number at his practice when I worked there was 5,000. He knew his practice. Everybody knew. The assistants knew. The front office knew. Of course, he knew. We're trying to get 5,000. And he told me, that was like one of the first things he told me when I came in as an associate. He said, we try to get 5,000 and that can be through whatever. But for him, it was very easy. He knew what his fees were, the team knew, and that was the goal. Now, did it mean that every day was 5,000? No. Sometimes a patient canceled last minute. Sometimes a lab case came late. Sometimes they had a patient that walked in, a new patient, that they prepped six teeth that day, just because they had
Absolutely.
time, right? So it's not always the case, but it is the goal.
And that's why I always use the word average, because the truth of the matter is that, let's say you're finding that there's this gap, whatever the number is, and you choose to dig deep and improve your case acceptance. Well, if you start being able to, I'll use the business term, close one additional comprehensive case per month, that's anywhere between, let's say, $5,000 to $10,000. Well, shoot, all of a sudden, you may be either way ahead of the game, or that's your gap right then and there. And so, keeping with the concept of average and making sure that you're really focused on hitting that each and every day, is going to end up getting you to where you want to go. But you can't even start the journey if you don't understand where you've been versus where you want to go and what the gap between those two are, so that therefore you can focus on specific areas, whatever those may be, to bridge the gap between those two numbers.
Yeah, I like what you're talking about. I was telling you before we started recording, I had my nephew over yesterday and he's doing like a little unofficial internship with me where I'm teaching him about some of my businesses. And we were talking about all the different ways that you can make more. And in dentistry, there's multiple different knobs, like you're talking about. It can start at the very top of the funnel, which is bringing in more new patients. It can be finding more things. So that could be utilizing technology like AI, perhaps something that you could be missing. It could be adding new things that you're doing. Maybe you're not doing implants, you're not doing dentures, you're not doing, I don't know, wisdom teeth, you're not doing ortho. You could add that stuff. And it can also be doing nothing new, bringing in no new patients, and simply just increasing your case acceptance or increasing scheduling patients as they walk out, right? I mean,
100%.
the smallest little things can make a big difference. So there's a bunch of different knobs to turn at every point in the practice. You don't have to do all of them. And
You're
I would say
correct.
don't do all of them because it can be really overwhelming, but start with one. So start by
Absolutely.
saying, I'm going to be a better communicator, or I'm going to bring on technology. Like I've seen this all the time with people that use Pearl, the AI company that I started. They tell me all the time, our case acceptance went crazy because we were diagnosing the exact same amount. Even if they said, this AI didn't help me find one other thing, but you know what it did do? Show the patient. And they understood that.
I mean, think about it. I mean, if you're working 48 weeks a year, I was looking at my phone to use my calculator. You're working 48 weeks a year. Let's say you're working 4 days a week. That's 192 days. If you increase your average production by $1,000, you've just added $192,000 to your bottom line.
Right.
I mean, it sounds too good to be true, but let me tell you something. When I was at Spear working with specialists and we were looking at these numbers, we were looking at very high level numbers. It was the number of consults coming in. It was the case acceptance of those concept, the consults, the average case value, et cetera. And we would pull individual levers. Maybe we needed to bring more cases in. Maybe we needed to increase our case accept, those kind of things. And these practices doubled, tripled, or more just by pulling very, very small levers that on the face of it seemed like, oh, I can't add six figures in my practice. Yeah, you can. Even in the mathematical example we just used, adding $1,000 a day to 192 day a year work year, well, that you just added almost $200,000 to the bottom line. It's
And I want
great.
to make sure if there's any new listeners listening to this, Martin and I are not all about the money.
Oh, heck
Okay.
no.
When we started this podcast and our online courses and our in-person courses, we are about three different types of wellness in dentistry. We are about the wellness of the patient. Number one, doing the best comprehensive, minimally invasive, preventative treatment as we can. We are about the wellness of the practice, which is what we're talking about today, right? Which is making sure we run a business well so that we can support the doctor, the teams, the patients, right? And lastly, the wellness of the practitioner, which is something that nobody was talking about really, and that was what we've mainly focused on. So understand that we're not saying sell more, right? Find things that aren't there. No, but I mean, if anybody knows us, they know that that is not the circles that we run in. We are saying do ethical treatment, but then get paid for it, right? I mean,
Absolutely.
we didn't get into dentistry to have charities. Most of us would probably love to do dentistry for free if we could financially, but I mean, we've got bills to pay and we want to make money doing this, but doing it ethically, doing it morally, and doing it sustainably. Because let's be honest, if you don't have a sustainable business, you're not going to be around for very long.
No, and to quote the author of Atomic Habits, James Clear, increase in financial production in a dental practice is a quote lagging indicator of increase of case acceptance for treatment that's needed, warranted, and appropriate. Period. End of story. I've said this on stages for well over a decade. It's increase in case acceptance of treatment that's needed, warranted, and appropriate because not all of us, well, none of us really, if we want to be honest with ourselves, we're trained to be effective communicators, leaders, or case acceptance communicators in dental school. That's not what they taught us. They taught us minimum level of competence so that we didn't harm people, which is, it is what it is. And then there's this next layer of being great communicators and great treatment providers through communication.
So, how would you summarize what we've talked about today?
What I would say is, we need to recognize that we can't do it all and we can't keep burning the candle at both ends forever. And so if we can accept the fact that our body is a limited resource, then we can then accept the idea or the concept that not working as many hours is something that we need to do. The first step just becomes a mathematical exercise. Where are we today? Where do we want to go? What's the gap numerically? And then, therefore, what do we need to do as clinicians to improve our skills to close the gap? That's the broad brush, big picture roadmap of how you can figure out how to make the same or potentially more and work less to respect your body.
Yeah, and notice that Martin said skills, and I don't want anybody listening to this to think that automatically means clinical skills.
No.
Yes, there's sometimes when he's saying skills, right? The clinical skills. So yes,
Yes.
maybe you want to add aligners, maybe you want to add sedation, maybe you want to add placing implants or storing implants. But some of those may be being a better leader. It may be learning how to communicate better, how to set expectations, how to set boundaries, right? Those are all skills, and we harp on this almost every week and in our courses, is skills are anything. Anything is a skill. Learning how to set an expectation is a skill. Learning how to communicate is a skill. Now, prepping a crown well is a skill too, and placing an implant well is a skill too. But I think with we dental professionals, we think skills are only things that are done with our hands. And so I would say, when I'm thinking about the summary of this, the first is, our title today is Why Shorter Work Weeks May Save Your Sanity. This is one thing we're very big on, saving the sanity of the practitioner. So in order to do that, you have to first realize, have this first step, which is you can't work all the time. Now, you may be able to do that for a short period of time. You may be able to do that while you're young. I sure did. But at some point, like I said, I got double tennis elbow. I mean, I physically was stopped. Mentally, I was actually okay. I hadn't had burnout yet. I was physically stopped that I couldn't work like that anymore. So I doubt that I went from 6 days to 5 days. Now, at 5 days a week, that was when the emotional part started for me. So I had to have the realization that I personally couldn't do this 5 days a week. And we know many doctors can't do this 5 days a week simply because of the emotional turmoil that happens in a dental practice. So we have to have that realization. And that should be the why, right? The why is we want to be in a great state for as long as we can, right? We want to do this sustainably for decades, if possible, support our families, support our teams and our patients. And then the how is what Martin talked about, which is the math. It is the practice management aspect of managing your practice with your mental health in mind. The people that I know that are great dentists and are great at business, they have some of the best mental health that I know because they understand the problems and they understand how to solve them.
And I think the other thing I'll say too, which I didn't say earlier, is analytics are your friend. And so if you need help with a consultant, hire one. There's lots of great platforms out there. Dental Intelligence is one of them that I can think of just off the top of my head. It's very highly regarded. When used properly, it can really give you the quote intel that you need to understand where you need to focus to bridge the gap from where you are to where you want to go tomorrow.
Yeah, and we're lucky in where we are recording this 2025 that we do have digital data. Imagine having to do this on paper 30 years ago, right? So we have all the digital data that we can look at, find, have the realization of what the problems are, identify what maybe the knobs we need to tweak those knobs, try them, and see what works. So if you guys like this, if today was good, we would ask that you share this with a colleague. Send this to a friend. If you know someone who maybe is working 6 days a week and you're like, ooh, maybe they need to cut down, right? Let us tell them. You don't have to tell them and risk your friendship, right? But yeah, let them listen to us. And now, after them hearing the end of this, they're going to know, oh crap, they sent it to me because I need to go down. That's all we ask is that you guys share this, help us spread the word of wellness and dentistry. And if you like what we talked about and you want to spend 2 days with us, Martin and I are super fun. If you haven't realized that yet, go to wellnessanddentistry.com, go to our links, and sign up for Lightside Live, which is August 8th and 9th. You get 12 CE credits. You have to do CE credits anyways. You might as well focus on your wellness, your leadership skills, and how to become a better person and a better dentist at the same time. And we'll see you on the next episode of Wellness and Dentistry.
Bye-bye.